They call me Mr. Tibbs.
Good morning, everybody. Today, just for the record, it's September 12, 2008, 7 years and 1 day since a pork-sucking, camel-harking idiot decided to bomb some towers, and our president decided to go kill Iraqis instead. I'll open up with that sentence because I want you to know right off the bat that though I am what I am and I do what I do, my politics, my position, and my stance on certain issues is going to be very different than what you're used to hearing. I know you see a microphone in front of my hand. It brings me here today because it's my understanding I'm supposed to somehow tie all this into the Constitution. So let's see. Anybody here know the history of the United States Constitution? No hands. Anybody here read the United States Constitution? I see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, maybe 10 hands. Anybody here read the documents that gave rise to the United States Constitution? Let me see if these words ring a bell. When in the course of human events it becomes necessary. Anybody know those words? Anybody know the words life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? Okay, everybody says or yes. Where do those words come from? Life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. Where are those words found? What? Declaration of Independence. Exactly. A bunch of people got together in 1775, wrote this paper, and by 1777 it was signed by all participants in the World War. From that piece of paper, we formed the government. And what was unique about that government is something that had never been seen in all of history up to that date, and has yet, by the way, to be repeated. Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, Benjamin Franklin, all believed in the basic principle that all power, all rights, everything to which every human being would want or would be entitled, comes from themselves. It starts with me. Whether you say God gave it to you, whether you say it's a natural born human right, that's individual to you. But the uniqueness of the American experiment, the writing of that document, and the process that followed was based on the principle that all political power starts with you. Each and every one of you. And the only time that you give up a right, or a privilege, or an immunity, is when collectively, through the voting and electoral process, you put somebody in the White House or somebody in elected office who you all agree says, go ahead, take away my rights to fly an airplane without having to show identification. It's your choice. Now, what happened to those three famous words? Life, liberty, property. Everybody here read the Constitution, or a bunch of you did. Can anybody tell me if we have a constitutional right to life? And I don't want to talk about abortion. I mean, flat out, the right to get up in the morning, draw a breath, and have nobody say otherwise. Come on, you read the document, didn't you? Did you read the document? Did you read it? Tell me, is there in the Constitution a right to life? Well, to answer your questions, answer my own question, I will tell you flat out that in the 11 years that passed between a group of radicals getting together and writing a Declaration of Freedom to a political process where 13 different governments sent representatives to get together and try to come up with some kind of compromise, the absolute inalienable right to life that was in the Declaration of Independence disappeared. Inalienable, by the way, you gotta look that up. Anybody here not know what the word inalienable means? Inalienable means you can't give it up. It means it can't be taken away from you. It's your skin. They literally have to rip off your skin. It's a right that is as much a part of you as your identity. 1787, the Constitution was drafted. And in the Constitution itself, nobody mentioned life. In fact, the only time they mentioned life was when they were talking about terms of congressmen, senators, and presidents. The compromise that brought about the Bill of Rights, you think, well, it's got to stay in there. I have a right to life. Anybody read the Bill of Rights? Any of the amendments to the Constitution? Did anybody see? Every American or every person or every human being has a natural right to life. It's not there. In fact, it didn't even become an issue until halfway through the Bill of Rights, the Fifth Amendment. And even there, they said, you don't have a right to life. Our government said, your right to life is limited by what we call due process. In other words, the state, the government, the people that you vote for, the ones that you sign off on the death penalty, can come to your house one day, knock on your door, say you're under arrest, you're charged with a capital offense, throw you into the criminal justice system, and long story short, you end up with a needle at Greenhaven. There is nothing to prevent that. An inalienable right is what we went to war over, and what we settle over is our life is partially ours, and it's partially not. Any other rights you guys think you have? None? Come on, I'm going home. Nobody's answering. Nobody here has it, thinks they have any other rights, huh? Let's try this one. What have I got in my hand? A lighter. Right? Does this lighter mean anything to anybody? Does this color mean anything to anybody? Does the fact that I have a lighter mean anything to anybody? Do I have a right to have a lighter? Am I saying something with this lighter? What am I saying? That I might be a smoker. That's one. What else does this lighter say? Anybody else got an idea? What if I do this and light the lighter? I'm here in fire extinguishers, am I? Anybody ever been to a concert? What am I doing when I do this at a concert? Come on, wake up. What am I doing when you see people light lighters at concerts? Or nowadays, from what I heard of the Jonas Brothers, open up their cell phones. But the same thing is you're creating a light. If you're an old person like me, you've been to 47 showings of the Rocky Horror Picture Show, you know what this is. But in any event, what is this at a concert? Okay. This is a symbol. This is speech. This is saying, I love you, Jonas Brothers. You're telling the band, you love them, you're with them, you're working together. It becomes a tool. A simple lighter that I used to light a pack of cigarettes or to set off firecrackers on the 4th of July becomes a way of showing the world, hey, I love that music. But what if I take a few steps to my right and I light that lighter again? Now I'm standing under the classroom flag. What have I done? Anybody got an idea? What have I done?
I broke the law.
I what?
I broke the law.
I broke a law. Which law did I break? The
law that says you can't burn a flag.
There's a law that says I can't burn a flag. I know. Nice Supreme Court judges who would tell you you're wrong. Who says you can't burn a flag when it falls on the ground? Who said, come on, what did I do when I stood under there with that lighter? What?
Yes, sir.
Well, okay, now that's a crime, vandalizing school property.
And or
an
endangering welfare of the minor.
I'm sorry, where are you? Exactly, and we have all these rules, and you're right on. And if you are now my lawyer, what are you going to stand up and tell the judge when they make that charge? When they charge you vandalizing school property, endangering the welfare of the minors, putting a whole bunch of people at risk, what do you think what are you going to say to the judge as my attorney? Well, maybe I have an issue with this particular thing here, and I believe that I have a statement to make, and it ain't that I love the Jonas Brothers. Maybe I want to protest the way my country's policy is in a particular matter. Burning the American flag is old, a form of protest, as probably everybody in his classroom. I don't know if they did it back in the 1800s, but I know in the 1960s, burning the American flag was how you protested the war in Vietnam, was how you protested the impartiality. And by the way, while we're talking about war and policy and losing control, everybody here who's a white male who owns land is the only person I want to talk to. Because again, that same constitution that was written, you're the only ones who have any say. You're the only ones who can own property, and because you're the only ones who can own property, you're the only ones who can vote, because that's what the document said. Women, you can inherit when your husbands die, but you don't have the right to vote. You can't own property. Blacks, three-fifths of the human being. Next time you hear a judge or a political candidate stand up in front of you and say, we need more Supreme Court judges who are quote-unquote originalists, who believe in the original language of the Constitution, you've got to make them look you right in the eye and say, excuse me. We've changed that Constitution because sometimes it's wrong. And it's not wrong in how it's written, it's wrong in how it's being applied. The originalist concept says, if the internet didn't exist in 1776 or 1787, then the internet is not something that you have a right to in 2008. That's misguided. The thinking I say is that in 1776 and in 1787, the libertarian perspective says that nothing's changed. There's nothing changed between the town hall, the telephone, or the internet. I'm sorry, am I keeping your word? It's all the same thing. It's all about my rights as a human being, as an American citizen, to speak. Just like lighting a lighter under the flag, or lighting a lighter at the Jonas Brothers. It's all about speech. Who read the paper today? I see one hand, and I told him I was going to pick on him. Did anybody else read the paper today? Anybody here know Ed Kanani? Syracuse has this little collective of extreme radicals, only because they love to travel around the country and get arrested. They protested the School of America to get a 6-month federal sentence. They burned it. They trash a government military recruiting office in Portland. They have 2 months in jail. They love this. This is their thing. They're my people from Berkeley. They live here and they won't quit. Ed Kanani on Labor Day, the last day of the New York State Fair, went to the fair in costume. Now, what costume did he wear? He wore an orange jumpsuit with a hood. He had shackles on his legs and hands. And he just kind of shuffled about the fairgrounds with a sign on him that says, close Guantanamo Bay in the war in Iraq. Somebody named Hank hung out around the Army Recruiting Center. Somebody complained to somebody, which caused the arrival of a few New York State troopers. The trooper said, Mr. Kanani, gotta get out of those clothes, gotta get out of those shackles. If you don't, we're gonna arrest you. How is that different? First question that I don't want any answer to, but just think about it. How is that different from me putting that lighter underneath that flag? Mr. Kanani refused. He said, this is the New York State Fair. This is the town square. This is where the public is at. This is where I, as an American, as a New Yorker, have the absolute God-given natural right to say what I gotta say, regardless of how stupid it is. And you know what the New York State Police did? They put handcuffs on him. They took him to jail and spent 7 days. And the reporter, John Stiff, who's a friend, Hart Seeley, excuse me, who's a good friend of mine, wrote exactly what I told you. He was appalled. He was offended that Mr. Kanani spent 7 days in jail for doing what any one of us would do if we were really moved by the issue. If he had done his homework and he would remember these Supreme Court judges that the presidents are going to be appointing, they would have gone back to the 1970s and heard about a case where the Hare Krishna started the same thing. At the time, they were represented by now Syracuse University Law Professor Tom Maroney, former U.S. Attorney Tom Maroney, who you should really make a phone call to, who was my personal nemesis. He loved me and hated me in law school. But anyway, I have a great deal of respect for him, and he represented the Christians. What the United States Supreme Court ended up saying is that the New York State Fair and the New York State Fairgrounds are not public property. It's not a public gathering. It's private. It's a private entity. Private fairgrounds. And therefore, because it's private fairgrounds, speech can be controlled. I don't agree, but that's the way it is. The only thing that seems to be is that this New York State Fair should have been wide open and they should have let them walk around. They mentioned me Dan O'Hara. They had an affair that they should have been all out handcuffs for violating an American's right to free speech, because what is the fair if not a showcase of what we are as a people? And some of us are homeless and some of us are protesting. Let's see, what else do libertarians like to talk about? What other rights? Oh, anybody notice any writing errors in the Constitution or specifically in the Bill of Rights? Everything. You read the Bill of Rights, you understood it, you got it. The right to assembly, the right to religion, the right to a lawyer, the right to, you know, not give testimony against yourself. Everybody read all that? Yes, yes. I see there's two writing errors, at least, in the Bill of Rights. And both of those writing errors have come to kill us. The first writing error, you took away your life, absolute right to life, excuse me. And they've also taken away your absolute right to privacy. Because like life, there is no stated constitutional right to privacy. If you read the whole damn document, you'll see that it all points to privacy. It is a wall that is built between me, the individual, and the government that will oversee me. But that's an intellectual discussion you can have with Justice Scalia when you go to law school and get to practice before the U.S. Supreme Court. Well, what about the writing in the word in the Fifth Amendment, again, being reasonable, be free from reasonable searches and seizure? We have that right. What is reasonable? Reasonable is subjective, or objective, as the courts have said. Objectively meaning, Mr. Brown decides if your behavior is reasonable in this classroom. Sorry, get your name?
Mr. O'Beara.
Mr. O'Beara decides if your behavior is reasonable in his classroom. The class of the behavior may not be the same, but the two of them are both teachers, and what you can get away with in one place, you may get in trouble with in another. Because that word reasonable seems to have been a compromise and nobody really wanted to take a stand on it, I wanted to give you an example of what reasonableness is in the current United States. I don't want to talk about drugs, but I'm reading from a book. And I have a list here compiled from actual cases decided by real live judges. And the following are what the courts consider reasonable basis for the police to stop somebody and search them for contraband. Having a pale complexion, having a dark complexion, stop me when you want me to. Having an Hispanic appearance, being between the ages of 25 and 35, acting nervous, acting calm, carrying $100 bills, carrying $50 bills, carrying $20 bills, carrying $10 bills, carrying $5 bills, wearing a pager, wearing casual clothing, wearing a black jumpsuit, wearing clothing with a bulge in it, wearing a lot of gold jewelry, wearing perfume, being a female, wears platform shoes, yes sir.
I'm not folks all around naked.
Wait, I'm not done. I'm only on the first of three pages. Running up large electric bills. Having window coverings that hinder someone from looking inside. Who's got curtains on their windows? Having a telephone answering machine recorded by someone other than the subscriber. I love it when my wife's got my answering machine. She said, sounds a lot better than me. Sounds a lot more professional. Owning a dog. Having a home security system. Having an RV. Having driving a rental car. Driving with an unfolded road map. Driving a car without a state license plate, heavy McDonald's fast food bags on the cart floor, scrupulous obedience to traffic law. And this one I tell you, if you drive 55, you're going to get stopped. If the speed limit is 55, and you're driving 55, you're going to pick up a tail. For two reasons. One, nobody drives 55. Two, it takes a lot of physical and mental focus to control a 4,000, 5,000 pound machine moving at high speeds down the highway. When you are seen by police, what they're doing was called driving to rule, driving 55, they figure that you're barely hanging on, that you're doing just what you need to do if you're trying to avoid being looked at by the police by doing exactly what you're supposed to be doing, because we all know that the rule is broken. 62 is the magic number. Let's see. Failing to twist around in a car and to watch as a marked patrol car passes you in the opposite direction. Sitting very erect in a car. Being a foreigner without friends or relatives in the United States. Being a foreigner who doesn't speak English. Returning from a visit from Mexico without having bought souvenirs. These are things the courts have said you can be stopped and searched for. Flying from Los Angeles to Detroit. Flying from LA to Atlanta. From Fort Lauderdale to Atlanta. From Dallas to Atlanta. From Atlanta to Kansas City. Flying from Miami, Chicago, Detroit, New York City, San Juan, Puerto Rico. Flying to and from any city. By arriving at an airport and buying a ticket shortly before a flight, paying cash, buying a one-way, buying a round-trip ticket, buying a first-class ticket. I'm not going to go on because the book is thicker than I am. It's called Drug Warriors and Their Prey, and it speaks for itself. But I want to get back to Mr. Kanani and this concept of free speech. How many of you really think you have the right to free speech? How many of you think you can say whatever? Yes, ma'am. Here, I was halfway up already to stretch. What was that something? Exercising. Okay. Well, while we're on the subject of free speech, I want you to know that I, if any of you ever do visit markblum.com, you'll see that I am a fair rat, New York State fair rat. I love the fair. I always love the fair. Templeton is my hero. Charlotte's Web is my favorite story. But also, over the years I've worked there and come to know people on upper level management. Now, there's an organization, and it's called Law Enforcement, meaning cops, prosecutors, judges, and everybody who is not a lawyer, pretty much. Defense lawyer, is called Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, LEAP.cc. They are national. They have people from the former head of Interpol. They have a head of the DEA, undercover agents, prosecutors, judges of every state and federal level working for them. I was told, just like Mr. Kanani, that there are limitations to the New York State Fair. And I said, I have a shirt I want to wear because it's a hot day, but it's not hot enough to go with a tank top. So I asked them if I could wear this particular t-shirt to the fair, because it's legitimate in my professional opinion, and I am a member of the organization. I was told that I would be thrown out of the fairgrounds, and I didn't do anything. I go on the rides, I go on the booths, I look at the cows, I look at the sheep, I look at the rabbits, but the shirt speaks for itself. I don't have any shackles, I'm dressed normally, I'm even wearing shoes for a change, which is something I don't do at the fair because I don't believe in. Point I guess I'm making is that there is a living constitution, and this constitution moves and changes every day, but it holds on and is anchored in certain basic fundamental principles that we seem to forget because we go along with whatever we're told. Nobody's wearing a hat in this room. Is there a reason why nobody's wearing a hat? I'm sorry, what? Anybody here have any bandanas on them? Why is it against school rules? I mean, it's hot in here, and me I like to have a bandana to wipe sweat off my face. I mean, I have your nice big blue bandanas. Anybody ever seen one of these?
Yeah.
What am I holding up? Come on, speak up. It's a bandana, but what am I holding up? A clock. That's one thing. What else am I holding up?
Game.
A what?
Game.
A game symbol. How do you know it's a game symbol? They assume. So if you put this, because if you help a woman, you're out there, and you decide to wear this tight around your left wrist, somebody would assume you're in a gang.
You're a gangster.
And that you're a gangster.
Yeah.
Just because of a piece of cloth. Well, I'm going to go over your heads, and I'm going to leave this up to your teachers to decide if they want to talk to you. Well, let's just say you saw me walking around the fairgrounds, and I had this sticking out of my right back pocket. Anybody know what that means? They didn't think so. The point is, different symbols mean different things. The question becomes, do you have the rights that you think that you have? And you don't. There are things that you cannot do in this classroom or in that hallway that 5 feet off the school property you are free to do. And you know that. Any one of you can come in an orange jumpsuit with shackles and handcuffs and stand outside the school and protest. You know, the school and demand that the school make a statement about Guantanamo Bay. But try wearing it in your classroom and you will be removed, am I right? And the argument will be that you're a distraction. Your teachers won't side with you because they have their own agendas. Everybody's got a political agenda. Now, I want to get down to, how much time have I got, by the way?
10:47.
10:47. Cool. I think you get to my two favorite four-letter words. First, I want to talk about voting. And I don't mean voting in the sense of should you vote for Obama, should you vote for the other team, should you vote for Green, should you vote for whoever. I want to talk about the right to vote itself. I started before by mentioning the first was white landowners, then it was we gave and recognized that women were just as smart, and we let women vote too, and then we realized that even transgender men can vote, and then we realized that, you know, people as young as 18 can vote, and, you know, and blacks can vote. And these are important things because we've got to the point, I believe, in our society that we don't even need affirmative action. I mean, if you think about it, we have a black man running for president, a woman running for president, a woman who ran for president, and the ceiling is shattered. It's time to take another affirmative look at affirmative action. But that notwithstanding, I want to get back to the question of voting because there is something that stops. How many of you are under 18? That would be everybody. There is something that stops almost all of you from deciding who the next president's going to be. And it's an amendment to the Constitution. It says nobody under the age of 18 can vote for president. Nobody under the age of 18 can vote for anybody, pretty much. I don't know, there may be some states like mayor, you know, can change the mayor. But generally the rule is you have to be at least 18 years old and a citizen of the United States. By the way, next time you hear Lou Dobbs or any one of these other idiots talking about an immigration crisis, the only thing that any person who visits this country has, the only thing, benefit that you have that they don't, is the right to vote. So if they're here working or doing whatever, it doesn't interfere with your right to vote. And writing, and the right to vote, without that, no other right is they don't. It has meaning. So you're the one that decides policy. But nobody in this room is going to decide any policies at all. I have mine, your teachers have theirs, we've been around for 30, 40, 50 years, we've got our retirement, our lives are in place, and there really isn't happening a lot that you guys are going to be able to do to change that. But, right now, you have the ability to make sure that each and every one of your parents and persons over the age of 18.
I know.
Good, how are you, sir?
Good,
you join us?
I'm here.
Oh, good. It should be your first and foremost responsibility to make sure everybody that you know who's going to be 18 at the time of your election is registered to vote. And on election day, it should be your personal responsibility to break your foot off of the butt of any one of them who won't get off theirs to get out of vote. It doesn't matter who they vote for, the voting should be mandatory, in my personal opinion. Australia does that, by the way. Australia requires every citizen to vote. They pay a $39 fine if you don't. Including dog ate my homework and all these other excuses, but there are no excuses. It's like a traffic ticket. I think that's a policy we should adopt here. But there's an even more important policy issue here. Anybody can one person in this room justify for me a reason why you folks are not allowed to vote, and somebody who's 80 years old in the Nottingham who doesn't even know what planet they're on can be yielded to a voting booth to pull leather for George Bush? Is there anybody who wants to make that argument? You're not adults? Okay, and what is an adult? Okay, that's one definition of an adult. Do you have any other definitions of an adult? See, I see an adult as somebody who is willing to and actually does take responsibility for their own actions and responsibility. I consider every single person in this room not a boy or a girl. This is not a class of boys and girls. You're a class of adults in training. This is your time to make mistakes. This is your time to look at adults, try to formulate adult behaviors. Give me one second. Learn from your mistakes while you still can get away with it and make yourself a better person. Well, but back to the adult question, why is it your opinion that only an adult should vote?
Let's go back to the guy with Alzheimer's at Nottingham, who's 87 and a half years old.
The last time he saw a family member was 25 years ago, dumped in there, when they wheel him out to election, to voting polls, every year, because he's a registered voter, and they say, here, pick a lever, and he randomly pulls a lever, and that, in my mind, explains how George Bush got his second term. But that's beside the point. You're telling me adulthood maturity, are you going to put somebody at the polls who's going to test everybody who comes in there as to their knowledge of the issues of the candidates?
I don't think so. I don't think random people are wasting time to vote. They don't know what to do. They have better things to do.
Is there anything better to do than vote?
Yeah.
Like what? Name one thing in your life that's more important than casting your vote once a week.
You can travel, you can go shopping.
Yeah! You can go shopping. You can take a 42 cent stamp and send it to $2. Yes. People do travel, people do shop, people do work abroad. People are engaged in the United States military, or they're not stable, they're not going to be near their voting place on election day, so they call up board of elections and say, yo, can I have like one of them, absentee ballot? So you get a paper ballot in the mail. You get a check on Hillary, you can check this one, you put it back in the envelope, address the board of elections, it goes to the board of elections. Now, wait a minute, this is where it gets fun. Goes to the Board of Elections and it's set aside with all the other paper ballots. How can we just stop and say, I'm not that young. Then they count the actual voting machines. If the ballots in that paper pile, if all of them came out in favor of the loser and it wouldn't change the outcome, they vote right to the fire. Your vote doesn't count. Now, what are you doing? Yes, sir. Alright, so you're saying if you're smart and if you have the competency to drive a car, you should have the competency to decide the next president of the United States. What about a 15-year-old? But should that discourage them from voting? See, I think, because you don't understand, you're being left with a $10 trillion debt, and I know $10 trillion means nothing to you, but if you're around the middle of the blackness of nowhere, you look up at a clear moonless night and you look at every star in the sky, that is less than 10 trillion stars. Okay? So you have to understand that when George Bush walks out of office, there's a credit debt. And it's your taxes that not only have to support the baby boomers before you, but you're going to have to pay down that debt. How are you going to do it? You better start working on overtime. You better start planning on two jobs. Or you better start planning on bankruptcy. Did I do something? This is why I tell people to think. And think about standing up. Because the only reason the law says that only 18 and over can vote is because a bunch of idiots got together and said, well, alright, we'll lower the voting age to 18. There shouldn't be a voting age. A natural born U.S. citizen, a naturalized U.S. citizen, an American citizen should have the right to vote for office in America. Period. 5 or 50 or 85. Yes, ma'am. Do you really think that'll happen?
Because they're not old enough yet to make their own decisions.
You're right. And how many 5-year-olds are going to find their way to a voting booth in the first place when they could be going shopping or watching their television?
Well, if they have the choice, why wouldn't they go with their parents when their parents are like, okay, I want you to vote in this?
Because it'll be, you haven't voted yet, but I can tell you one thing. People can gab like in your ear all the way up to the moment you go to the voting booth. Then you pull that lever and the curtain's closed and it's just you, your God, and the buttons. And you can lie, and you don't tell me, you don't tell the truth to your parents about everything you do.
Right, but I mean, I'm old enough to understand the difference between what my parents think and what I
think. Right, and I bet when you were 5, you were just as smart as you are now, and you didn't outbox your parents, or at least trying. Okay, I got kids, I got grandkids now. Yes, sir.
But kind of along the lines of what you were saying, isn't it that, you know, children are such some level of immaturity or lack of maturity, I guess you could term that they are kind of like molded and say, oh, you know,
malleable. But we're all malleable. You were raised in a home, right?
Absolutely.
Your parents, I assume, male, female, had, you know, normal human progress of passing on and creating your next generation. All the details of the side. You were raised in their home. You are the religion you are because they made you that religion. You are at the educational level that you're at because they made you that education. You like or dislike blacks and whites because of how you were raised. You're either listening to me or pick up full of crap based on influences of your parents. We're all subject to that, and that follows us throughout all our lives. Hopefully, at some point, we realize that maybe I disagree with my parents, I agree with my parents. When you get out?
Oh, no, no.
Oh, sorry. We do the things we do. I mean, you gotta face it. Who we are springs from the moment we're born. We're all subject to influence and pressure by our parents. And by others, our friends. And I think at a certain age, like 10 or 11, your parents are no longer your chief peer group. Your friends are the ones who are manipulating the thinking process. But again, it goes back to the guy who had the stroke, who's laying in a hospital bed, who gets to vote for, you know, whatever he gets to vote for, she gets to vote for. But because they're an adult, and that's it, they get to vote. And I say that if I could start a war, a social war, a real war, I would encourage every student, every person, natural born and naturalized, to demand right to vote because they're an American citizen. Because you need to vote today on a president who's going to be there to cut your debt. Because you're voting on your future and on your children's future and your grandchildren's future. Like I said, I already got mine. Anybody else have anything to want to throw one in on this one? Or does everybody agree with you that everybody should be able to vote? Yes.
Well, send a 2-year-old that can't even understand what an election means.
Well, how's a 2-year-old get to the voting pool? Voting pool. But see, you can't do that. That's like having somebody move around work. You can't do that.
Well, some of us are in front of you is a
paraplegic. Interesting question. What do we do with somebody who's paraplegic? I don't know. I've never dealt with the issue in voting, so I mean, an election issue. Yes, ma'am. You're next.
Also, the kids that are younger can't, like, understand really what's going on. I'm going to allow politicians to make this even more of a big this treating parties that are going to get children to vote.
So you think, all, I'm not saying only children vote, I'm saying everybody votes, and no, I ain't the majority. Okay, there's 330 million people in this country. Children, people under the age of 18 are not the majority. Yes, they're going to have to find ways to reach you, but they're going to have to find ways to reach you on an intellectual level, because they really don't think by promising you, by promising everybody their own private web page and their own private Facebook page is what's going to make the sale close the deal for your vote. I think they're going to have to say, look, when you grow up and you're ready to start a family, you're not going to have to worry about this massive tax debt that's about to fall on your shoulder. I think they're going to have to reach you. I really do. And while we're on that subject, that's a nice transition point. Let's get to the second issue of it, and that is citizenship. Because I said, I believe every American citizen, natural born or naturalized, should have the right to vote. Who here is a citizen of the United States? Good. Who here is a citizen of the state of New York? Does anybody understand the difference? Does anybody even get what I'm trying to make? The United States of America is the official title of this land of the free and home of the brave. United States. United States. Every state is recognized at its inception and continuing. I guess I'm working on it. You keep looking at the clock. That's all right. This country was started with the concept that 13 separate countries were going to create a common overlord government, a NATO type of government, or a United Nations type government that would enable them to settle disputes as between themselves. It was always the belief that I'm a New Yorker, and I'm a New Yorker, and that's who I am. By virtue of being a New Yorker, I am also a United States citizen. But I have two sets of laws, because there's the United States Constitution, but New York has a constitution. New York has a body of law separate and distinct from federal law. We have our own ways of doing things. Having grown up in Los Angeles and moving here, I can tell you, New York does it very differently than some other states across the country. And you have to decide, are you a New Yorker? Are you a U.S. citizen? Should we blur the lines? Should we treat the states as counties or the role of governor anymore? I mean, there's a lot of talk about consolidating services. Should we just have the United States of America based on 50 countries, one nation under 50 cantons? That's what we have to decide. We're not built that way, but that's how we're being treated. For example, the state of Oregon passed an assisted suicide law, allowing doctors and family members to assist terminally ill people to die. That case went all the way to the United States Supreme Court. And no, opposed it was the Bush administration. And they said, no, we can't have that. Life is mandatory. Ask Terry Schiavo. You have to live at all costs, no matter what. Anyway, they went to the United States Supreme Court, and the United States Supreme Court said no. So the state of Oregon is an independent entity. As long as they guarantee their citizens the basic constitutional rights that are guaranteed to every American citizen, nothing is to stop the state of Oregon from recognizing rights above and beyond that. So, for example, the federal constitution of that Bill of Rights and everything else in federal law sets a floor, but nothing stops communities from going above that. In fact, one great judge whose name eludes me at the moment, talked about the concept of every community being its own independent social laboratory. And how we wanted to encourage that. How we wanted people to be able to move around and to develop new social theories and better ways of doing things in going places. California passes a law says we recognize that people who are terminally ill and in severe pain need a particular type of drug to ease that pain and ease their suffering. That drug is banned under federal law. It's on Schedule 1. You possess that drug, you go to prison. It has no medical use. That's the opinion of the federal government. But California and their physicians and their legislature looked at the question and said, no, that's not quite true. We think this drug does have medical benefits, and in fact, we're going to legalize it. We're going to make it available to every person who needs it to heal them. And in doing so, they passed something. They legalized marijuana for terminally ill people in California. Again, comes the Bush administration, I should arrest you about our morality, and wants to save us from ourselves. And again, we're in front of the United States Supreme Court. Now the United States Supreme Court said, federal government's rules are in charge here. Even though California gave a greater benefit to its residents than is guaranteed under federal law, the federal government cannot tolerate a state violating the law. And therefore, the Supreme Court said California's medical marijuana law is illegal. In 14 states now that have passed medical marijuana laws, all those laws are valid. And even though state constitutions are not going forward, federal agents are coming in and arresting people who are dying. So you have to decide, are you a New Yorker or are you an American? Which is your priority? Where do you want to put your emphasis? Should DeWitt, should Manlius, should Onondaga County be a star among the entire nation? Should we put together a sample education program or a sample socialized medical program? These are all issues that we can bring to the table, and you guys can do it. It's on you. You're the ones that control the future, only you can grow up. Which manipulate, if you're talking about parents manipulating children, we're all well known that kids can manipulate their parents. If I leave you with anything, I'm going to leave you with one last thing. Please, manipulate your parents to get off their asses and vote. I don't care for who, but it's important that we get people to vote. Because it's your rights, and it's mine, and it's our freedom. Every time they say, to take away something, good luck in getting it back. Mr. Smith, is there anything you would wish to add to this conversation? Okay, anybody have any questions? No questions? I'm done. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. George Bush, for making it easier for me to get a Tech 9 and AR-14 than it is for me to get a pap smear and a good education. Thank you, Mr. Bush. Thank you from the first boy I kissed, who you sent off to war in Iraq, and he returned only by telegram in a box. Thank you, Mr. George Bush, from my sister, who is not proud to say that when she was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis at the age of 28, that she stayed married to a man that hit her so she could receive full medical benefits. Thank you. Thank you from me. Thank you from my body. Thank you from the woman that I love, who I want to marry. I want to call my wife without you standing at my back, Bible thumping daggers and demanding constitutional amendments to prevent me from loving this revolutionary love as though I could soil the sanctity of marriage. I can't. You are trying to deny me the right. It's not like you could ever touch my love or mess with my love at all. You're trying to deny me the right, which in the end I must fight for, because it's a matter of voice, which is choice, which is exercising my own democracy, which in this country, and it shouldn't be, pigeonholed, marginalized, or constitutionally compromised under the pretense that who I love is destructive to the fiber that weaves the fabric of America, which after all, ironically, happens to be cotton. That notoriously bloody fiber that my great-grandmother and great-grandfather toil over for no wage in Mare Rouge, Louisiana. Mr. Bush, you have forgotten that we are all Americans. You have forgotten that this country was built on the backs of blacks that were shackled, strapped, and stacked, slash gassed, and then taxed and cashed in on like cattle. You have forgotten that we are all America. And if you are not with us, then you are against us. Us, the 99% of the population that makes less than $1.2 million a year, the 43 million Americans that have no health care, the 14 million children that go to sleep every night hungry. You are against us, the tired, the poor, the people with more passion, potential, promise than money, the people, the poets, the rappers, the MCs, the street corner philosophizers, the artists, the hieroglyphic graffiti scribers. You are against us, America, the DJs, the ex-convicts, the ex-heroin junkies, the used-to-be deadbeat daddies, and the wonderful baby mamas. If you are not with us, you are against us, the black, Latino, Cuban, Asian, Eskimo, gay, lesbian, Democrat, ex-Republican, trumpet playing, basketball coaching, tennis playing, Americans. We understand that you, Mr. Bush, are just a smokescreen. You are just the Sony, Nike, GMC brand name of a regime of evil so arrogant that you have the audacity to murder in our name and call it justice, call it liberation, when really all it is occupation, which is the same thing that Hitler did in Poland, Austria, and Hungary. We recognize, Mr. Bush, and we thank you. We thank you for showing us that we have to fight vigilantly every day for our freedom like we fight for our life. Because if we don't fight for it, it's going to disappear, like health care, like Social Security, like black and Latino men between the ages of 16 and 30. It will disappear. So thank you, Mr. Bush, for showing us that we have to fight. And this is our thank you poem and our love you poem to America. Because even though he took you, even though he took you by force and raped you and forsook you before the eye of God, we still love you, baby. You're beautiful. And we're fighting for you. We're fighting for you. Keep the light on.